Welcome back to Radio Rothbard. This is the current events podcast of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And you can always get more information on everything you hear here at mises.org. Now, before we get going, I just wanted to note that we have coming up on May 16th, this runs from May 16th to May 18th, is our Human Action Conference. This is to commemorate the 75th anniversary of Human Action, Ludwig von Mises' great economics book. And we'll have at our campus in Auburn, Alabama, all of our top scholars. That includes Joe Salerno, Hans Hoppe, Lou Rockwell will be there, of course, and everybody to talk about Human Action and the contribution it has made to economics and really to the world in general. And this seems really appropriate in the weeks following Renato's Moicano's announcement that if you care about your country, read Ludwig von Mises. So this conference may help you get a good jump start on that. And also wanted to note that in our raffle giveaway of a free ticket to the Human Action Conference, congratulations to Ralph Lehman, this year's winner. So he has himself a free ticket, but you can, of course, sign up and attend the conference yourself. Just go to mises.org, click on events, and you'll see it there. Well, this week we're going to talk about the CIA and the FBI, that is, the American spy state. This topic has been forced back into the spotlight by last week's three-hour discussion between Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson. Now, as you can imagine, with such a long interview, there were many topics they discussed, ranging from religion and evolution and things like that. Some of the discussion I found more convincing than other parts, but I think certainly one of the most important topics they brought up was the issue of the real problem that organizations like the CIA and the FBI bring to the United States. These are essentially America's secret police. And as we've seen in recent years in discussion about the deep state and its commitment to undermining a sitting president, as we've found out with lots of facts about the Trump administration in recent years, these organizations are highly politicized and very problematic, to say the least. Now, in this discussion between Rogan and Carlson, they talked about the Kennedy assassination, the undoing of Richard Nixon. Carlson talked about problems where it seems that perhaps these intelligence organizations are blackmailing members of Congress. And we'll talk about a little bit of all of that, and certainly the blackmailing issue. This is all based on real history in the United States and things the FBI has already done throughout its past. But what's remarkable, and I don't want to discuss a whole lot in detail about what they talked about, but I do think it's remarkable and noteworthy that two major media figures, Carlson and Rogan, are spending time bad-mouthing the CIA and the FBI. Now, this is all to the good. This is long overdue because if you've, in my experience, if you spend any time talking to conservatives and other people who pretend to be opposed to government power, what you will often encounter is, I hate the DMV and high taxes are bad, but thank goodness we have those heroes in the CIA and the FBI to keep us safe from terrorists and other bad people. They're heroes. Without them, we'd all be dead. Thank goodness for America's secret police. Yay. And this is a very common attitude. I've noted before that I think one of the best things about the Trump administration is that it has called into question and really exposed just how highly politicized these people are and how nutty a lot of them are. Looking at a lot of the testimony from these FBI agents, I mean, these people often give the impression of being overgrown children. It's fairly disturbing to see these people actually in action. But I don't know what effect this is having, especially on the older crowd, on the BoomerCon crowd, if you will. It seems there's still a lot of commitment to making excuses for these organizations and talking about how wonderful they are. But that's my impression of the situation. I don't know if your impressions, though, are any different. I mean, what do you think is the state of public opinion about these organizations right now?
Well, again, I think this is something where we can talk about the broader Trump effect. where the more of a, you know, the more that you're a conservative boomer who identifies himself first and foremost as a Trump person, the likelihood that you're going to be distrustful of these agencies goes up, in my experience. If you are a Republican boomer and you are less identified by Trump, even if you're going to vote for him, right? And obviously, affiliation here does not mean that Trump is going to do anything about this, right? Just the way that you kind of self-identify and you know, where your tone is. The less you identify as a Trumper first, a Republican second, then the more likely you are to still have this very romantic depiction of these agencies and golly gosh darn, they're just patriots trying to protect us from enemies.
David French Republicans, we would say. Yes.
Yes.
Those sorts of people.
But I think beyond just the older generations, younger generations, I think that you see a similar dynamic where younger Republicans I deal with, again, if you're a younger person who identifies as a conservative or a right winger, chances are you're either one of two camps. You're either the worst type of opportunistic political person that is just looking to create a resume just good enough to justify your mediocrity. Working as a staffer in some capital, be it DC in your state, or you're going to be, or they tend to be more religious. They're more serious about these things. They read more broadly. They might be familiar with the Mises Institute, in my experience, even though they might not be consider themselves an Austrian or ever read Human Action, right? They need to come to the conference. But there, I think that similar level of distrust, willingness to look beyond the element, the high school narrative about these agencies is there. And so I think there is a very real shift that is reflected in people like Tucker, people like Joe Rogan talking about these things in a way that is relatively novel on the modern right. But of course, there's been a long-lasting history of the CIA and the FBI being topics of conversation. I mean, particularly CIA, 60s and 70s, it was a major topic of conversation. Even going in the 90s, right? You had a lot more conversation about these agencies. You had a lot more conversation about the IMF and the World Bank and all these sort of globalist institutions that are now being talked about now in relatively mainstream, conservative outlets. I think the dispersal of media there has played a role with that. Easier to start a podcast than a cable news network. I think this is another example of what is old is new again. And what's fascinating, of course, is that, I think that people are so desperate to try to make sense of things that are unintelligible to them. And so when you see things like the current state of Congress, which is Connor O'Keefe wrote a great article on this morning about the craven cowardice. I mean, this might be the worst Congress that we've had in with an entire modernity of modern era of just awful, awful Congresses. This might be the most embarrassing Congress, best illustrated by, just the recent votes over, foreign aid and NDAA reauthorization and just runaway budgets and incredible spending, right? I think a lot of people, particularly of the older crowd, are trying to understand how in the world, Republicans just won the House. We've got Trump out there complaining about this sort of stuff. We'll ignore, some of Trump's backdoor language on the foreign aid bill and some of the stuff that's come out there in the past, right? But how in the world, with the world obviously burning down, with Republicans having control, how are we getting these outcomes? And I think one of the things that makes sense to them is the idea of blackmail, of coercion, of these methods, you know, of the methods that we get. We know the CIA does, again, you know. And so whether or how much of that is a direct role in the state of the federal legislature is an open question. Many of these people are just mediocre hacks that will do whatever very serious people tell them to do. Some of them have delusional beliefs that, you know, golly gosh darn, what their delusion, their really bad policy views are actually important, right? But there probably is an element, particularly when you look at leadership, when you look at, you know, the Speaker of the House, the way that he has completely done full 180s on some of these issues. The questions of, okay, well, what is that political deep state? You know, what are they doing behind the scenes? Again, those questions, I think, are a necessary part of people trying to make sense of the political environment around us. And I think that whatever the realities are there, again, in some ways, you almost prefer it to be this sort of sinister coercion than other means, because there's a simple answer there, but. You're just trying, but simply people recognizing that the system is not working, that this doesn't make sense. Opening up the door for these conversations gets your average person closer to understanding the way federal power is truly operating in society right now. And that's at least a step in the right direction. And that's why I'm always very, very glad to see these conversations taking place, particularly given, again, just the incredible size and impact of the platforms that people like Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson have made for themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point, is just getting people over their naive view of how things work in Washington is just in itself, I think, a positive development, and recognizing that this is not people making, struggling with their consciences and trying to decide what the right thing to do. They all imagine it's like the West Wing. Remember that stupid TV show from like 20 years ago? I mean, you were probably very young at the time. But when I worked in a state legislature... Well, when I was in the state legislature, the West Wing was very much a show. And yeah, lots, you could tell all these idealistic young people thought that that was how it really is and how it should be. And just so nonsensical. But realizing the dark side of these organizations and the fact that this is real, that these organizations exist, they're totally amoral, and that they function in the shadows of Washington. And it's difficult to know what they're doing at any time, because these are totally unaccountable organizations. And they, of course, don't report their activities in any meaningful sense to Congress. All sorts of dark money is in there. I mean, it's ridiculous to claim that you're for a free and open society, that you're for constitutional government, and to also be in favor of organizations like the CIA, given the reality. And I think we could just, I mean, this isn't a new attitude. The man who created the CIA learned to fear and hate the CIA. And that's something I bring up in an article from the other day, is how Harry Truman eventually became very disillusioned with the CIA. Now, we could note then that this he made these views public in 1963, just a month after the assassination of Kennedy, which I'm sure is just a total coincidence, has nothing to do with that whatsoever. And he wrote in the Washington Post, quote, "For some time, I've been disturbed by the way the CIA has been diverted from its original assignment. It has become an operational and at times a policymaking arm of the government. I have never had any thought that when I set up the CIA that it would be injected into peacetime cloak and dagger operations in the way it has." He's making a distinction here between the operational stuff that the CIA does and just collecting information. Truman... let's go on to a later quote. He then says, just more explicitly, in an interview that was published in 73, I'm not sure when the interview took place, when asked about how he felt about the creation of the CIA, Trump replied, "I think it was a mistake, and if I'd known what was going to happen, I never would have done it. It got out of hand. They've got an organization over there in Virginia now that is practically the equal of the Pentagon in many ways. Those people in the CIA don't just report on wars and the like. They go out and make their own. It's become a government all of its own and all secret. That's a very dangerous thing in a democratic society," unquote. Truman had imagined that the CIA would just provide information to the president. That was his imagined role for the CIA. The CIA would collect info, give it to the president, help the president make better decisions about what was going on in other countries, about wartime operations, that sort of thing. What it ended up was being this horrendous organization that we now know it from these sorts of operations, like MK Ultra, where it was engaged in these bizarre mind control experiments. It was giving people LSD against their will, against their knowledge. Lots of shady things happening around that. These were all illegal activities, by the way, and which, of course, the CIA lied about for decades until they were forced to admit on some of these operations in the 1970s when the left was good, back in the good days of the left, in the wake of the Vietnam War, where they really cracked down on some of these intelligence organizations. And so when you hear about some of these remarkably and shockingly immoral things that the U.S. government is doing, it's usually the CIA that's involved. And this is all the operational side of the CIA, these experiments. We know that they were enlisting doctors, CIA doctors, to lend legitimacy to medical experiments. And this all came up again after 2001 with the quote-unquote war on terror, where the CIA was again being asked to create these dark sites where they were taking people and torturing them, engaging in torture experiments, new drugs that they wanted to use to experiment on people, all of which has been documented. That's all the sort of stuff that Truman found very alarming. He thought CIA was just going to give him info about what was going on in foreign countries. And of course, it turns out the CIA is terrible at that. CIA thought the Soviet Union was an economic powerhouse in the mid-1980s. Completely wrong. CIA didn't see the Iranian Revolution coming. CIA was clueless about the Bay of Pigs, didn't know what was going on there. Just over and over, the CIA didn't know that the Soviets were shipping nukes to Cuba before the Cuban Missile Crisis. So all of this just shows how useless the CIA has always been, really, and especially is now. So you get even people like then Angelo Codevilla, the late columnist, who by no means is known for being a hardcore libertarian, but in the years before, right before he died, so in 2020, he's basically saying, yeah, get rid of the CIA. It's dangerous. It's obsolete. It accomplishes none of its actual goals, and it's ideologically partisan. It's a political organization at this point. It's like the KGB. They pick their guy, they support him, and they go against the guys they don't like. And that is the state of the CIA right now. And so to sit back and think, oh, yes, they're just patriots who are trying to protect us and keep us safe. I mean, this displays a level of gullibility that is really quite shocking. So I can just hope that some of this discussion then that's coming up with Rogan and Carlson gets legs to a certain extent, and then we can just keep bringing it up again and again. It is impossible to claim that you are a defender of freedom and constitutional government and limited government in the United States and still also side with these secret police organizations. I just really don't see how that is possible at this point.
Well, and it's also impossible to claim that we have any of those things if you're familiar with the way that these entities operate. And again, I think Truman's quote is a great illustration of what really happened during, you know, the Progressive Revolution in the early part of the 20th century, where you have a combination of, you know, naive politicians and you know, I guess I should probably, you know, caution, right? You know, Harry Truman, you know, no problem dropping nuclear bombs. I mean, you know, I don't want to suggest that he is some beacon of virtue by any means. But obviously, you know, if we take his statements at face value, and I since this is critical of his own legacy there, I'm more prone to do so, is that you very clearly had a serious political class naive to the realities of what happens when you create these institutions. You had sinister, self-serving people that had the influence and power to help establish and create these various entities that were built, you know, whether it's the CIA, FBI, whether it was, you know, the Federal Reserve, you know, all these various agencies that were created, there was this massive expansion of federal power. And These were all, you read about this era, right? And they all the big talking point, right, is the need to modernize government, the need to rely more on sort of this technocratic expert control. We're just going to bring in the best and brightest. We're going to train them out to be spies. They're going to provide us better information. We will use that information to help protect the domestic population, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the problem is, and this goes back to the very basic fears that the founding fathers had, right? You create a standing army. That standing army will be used for political ends. We've seen this throughout history, right? You have a large army. It's built up. That has incredible power in its own right. They start doing, the government starts doing things the standing army doesn't like, and then they will interject themselves in here. It's more explicit, right? When you have people with guns and the like saying, no, don't do this, than it is when you're dealing with the art of spycraft there. But the same dynamics are very much in place, where you have this entity that wants to perpetuate its own existence, that cannot allow for a position of peace to break out, or else their value is undermined. They're going to utilize the tools that they have been trained in, that they have, to expand and protect and solidify their own power, increasing their own budgets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to work with their own self-interest. And so the creation of all these agencies, again, any facade, any romantic idea of the structure of government that the founding fathers wanted, all of this conversation is completely useless given to what has been created now. And there's obviously various aspects where on the legal side and the regulatory state and all that sort of stuff that has created additional deformities thereafter. But this is, once you start creating these standing agencies of people that are, their entire purpose is to help control other governments, to help monitor and influence global events, the expectation should be that they're going to use that same power to influence domestic events as well. And of course, that's exactly what we have seen. And again, as we've noted, there's a variety of details here, and we don't only have to look at the sexy aspects of MK Ultra and some of these the more colorful dynamics of that we saw in the 60s and 70s. There were very real conversations, again, coming from largely the left at the time, right? In many ways, right? If we look at, led to giving a fresh coat of paint over these agencies, particularly for those on the right, the war on terror is a unescapable period of history there. Most of that criticism in terms of the political dynamic arose from the left, not the right. So it was in the 2010s, right? You had Dennis Feinstein, Dianne Feinstein, certainly no great advocate for individual liberty or concerns about a overextending state. She herself was going publicly about how the role that John Brennan and the CIA had on spying on her own committee, on her own people, right, her own staffers and the like. So these are very modern, very public concerns about CIA spying tactics on elected legislators in their staffs in the modern era. Now many of the same outlets that published those articles in 2014 are the ones that will laugh at Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan, this type of conversation now. These conspiracies and actually the deep states is a good thing, right? The same exact outlets that were publishing this stuff 10 years ago have the very same opinion now. Again, this goes to the clownish dynamic of political discourse in this country right now and the corruption of these institutions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think anyone listening to Radio Rothbard has a properly cynical view on these things already. But it is just worth highlighting because, again, we are so saturated with these old misdeeds that just reminding, Dianne Feinstein was actually talking about this stuff in 2010. I mean, it's easy for that stuff to get memory hold. But again, this is not decades old history. This is you still have people at the CIA, still Lynn Langley, that had a role in that, still kicking around. And again, that's why these conversations are so important to have, so those recent incidents aren't memory hold either.
Yeah, you mentioned the left's position on the deep state, right? They, after years of saying, oh, it doesn't exist, there is no deep state, then a few months ago, last month I think it was, they published an article on in the New York Times saying, yeah, the deep state is real, and it turns out it's awesome. And so this is your typical left-wing propaganda line of it's not happening, and it's good that it is. This is how it works. Oh, it's a conspiracy. It's not real. It's not real. Oh, it turns out it is real. And thank goodness it's real. It's great. It's a wonderful thing. And that's where we are with the deep state now among the left. Oh, yeah, it's real. And thank goodness it's there to preserve the great institutions of the American state. That's essentially where the mainstream left is, unless I suppose they run a foul of you personally, as we found out with that senator from California. And so it's a very interesting narrative to follow in the United States. And we can see that also with the FBI. Let's talk about the FBI a little bit. And this is an equally dangerous organization to the CIA. Now, it's a different organization from the CIA. We talked about why the CIA was created. It's supposed to be informational only. And they've got these weird operations now that they've invented, as these experiments, their torture plans, all that sort of thing. Now, the FBI is different in the sense that the FBI actually is legally a law enforcement organization. At least that's how it was created. So these people actually they walk around with guns. And that's different from a CIA spook who's really just supposed to downplay whatever role he has in your life. And the FBI, however, has really in the last 20 years moved away from its law enforcement mandate and now calls. You can go to your website, and I don't know if the info's still up there, but they used to just say explicitly, the FBI is no longer a law enforcement agency. The FBI is now a national security agency. And so in the 90s, the FBI shifted to national security. So much more of a spying role, much more of acting like they're there to track terrorists. We all know this from their spectacular job on preventing 9/11, where, by the way, scholars of that, critics of the 9/11 operation, have showed that the FBI's incompetence in the lead up to 9/11 is astounding. Of course, the FBI just got a bump to its budget after its horrible, horrible failures around 9/11. So it just proudly proclaims now that it's basically part of the spy regime. It's not there to catch bad guys who are kidnappers, bank robbers. That's of course, was all the propaganda in the mid-20th century. And that's all out the window. They're now spying on you. They now come to your home and harass you, enforce gun laws against U.S. citizens, peaceful U.S. citizens, that sort of thing. Meanwhile, of course, the homicide rate is at 40-year highs in much of the United States. So, and by the way, guys like Larry Nassar, who molest teenage girls, the FBI, you can tell the FBI repeatedly about the crimes of these people, and the FBI, they got better things to do. They're too busy harassing law-abiding people. And we've seen that, of course, in how the FBI has bent over backwards, hunting down little old ladies and grandmothers to prosecute because they wandered around in the Capitol for a few minutes on January 6th. And that's what the FBI's real priorities are, is protecting the regime. And also we've seen in how they were spying, the regime was spying on the Trump campaign. They've perpetuated all this nonsense about Russiagate, which has been shown to be nonsense. The FBI had a role in protecting Hunter Biden. It's just such a blatantly political organization that if you think your local friendly FBI agent is looking out for you and he's just trying to catch bad guys, you are just wrong. And we can, of course, this is all in the tradition of the FBI. We look at what was the deal with the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, and lots of good research has come out in recent decades about the Hoover years. Now, Hoover explicitly, and we now know, spied on anyone of importance, especially members of Congress, but anyone else he thought he might have to influence later. And this was part of how he maintained his power. This wasn't just the only way he maintained his power. He genuinely was lauded by the general public for being a commie hunter and all of that sort of thing. And Hoover was very good at playing that xenophobia bit, making himself look like some sort of domestic hero. But he also, if anybody grew suspicious of him and the FBI, he would spy on them. And then, of course, most people in positions of power, they have shady backgrounds, they're perverts in various ways, and they can then be blackmailed fairly easily. So he would spy, illegally, of course, on all these people and then blackmail them. This is known. This is not like some theory. And he, through that method, was able to exercise great power. And of course, he used his FBI agents to do that. One of the most famous cases of this, of course, is how, especially after he started opposing the Vietnam War, the regime was like, oh, that's civil rights stuff. That's fine. We can use that to our advantage. But when he started opposing the war, then all the gloves came off in terms of the regime hating on Martin Luther King. And they started spying on him, recording him with his various affairs and that sort of thing. And then, of course, sending him that famous anonymous letter that says, why don't you kill yourself? Because otherwise we'll destroy you. A letter that we know came out of the FBI. And so that's the sort of wonderful stuff that the FBI does. You know, they're keeping you safe. So of course, it's not a stretch at all to say that currently the FBI is blackmailing members of Congress. I don't have any specifics about that, but we know that it's historical fact, that the FBI has done this in the past. And of course, no one was better positioned than Hoover, to understand how people can be blackmailed. There's been persistent rumors for a long time about Hoover's fondness for teenage boys and that sort of thing. And so Hoover probably had a deep understanding of the way Washington worked and the sorts of people that are powerful there. So that's Hoover, really Hoover, what's going on. So when you think of the FBI, make sure and remember what the real history of the FBI was throughout the 20th century. So none of this is new if we're accusing the FBI of this sort of thing again.
Right. And it's also worth noting, too, because, often, this entire era is sort of portrayed as, oh, well, the FBI is just, they had a single narrow focus on going after the left. And of course, if you actually look at the history there, Brandon Buck, who we did a show with, I believe, last year, identified how the FBI was used not only to attack, pinko commies, but also smear critics on the right as fascists and brown shirts, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. This was being outside of the realm of allowable opinion and the views of the FBI from both political sides made you a target of this entity. And of course, things have only gotten worse as time. And I think one of the, when we think about these historical periods, I think there is value in dehomogenizing perhaps some of the ideological elements to it. I mean, we've talked about how these are inherently political agencies, but of course, the fact that they are political does not mean that the agenda itself has stayed the same. The ideologies of people involved has changed. The pool of talent that they tap into to build the rank and file has also changed. And I think that's one of the things that makes, when we look at the current era of these agencies, the shift towards a shift towards the views that are, if we simplify, the challenge of the 60s and 70s as, say, the culture of DC and Washington, trying to stamp down on the counterculture of universities, overly simplistic, but a useful illustration there. Now, these same agencies are more ideologically aligned with the perspectives of higher education and their worldview, and more at the expense of, overly jingoistic, sort of patriot man, right? Middle America. Again, I'm just trying to pull every cliche out of my rear here as I can to help define these terms. And I think that does go into, where is the top targets within these areas now? And I think that's what's leading to this building and deserved tension, where the sphere of, as the sphere of broader political opinion grows, as the realm of skepticism of these agencies becomes more mainstream. So it's not simply, you know, the remnant of the old right in a kind of a narrow field of things, you know, people that had great, great influence, were writing important books, but were not well represented within the way in the media landscape that average Americans were consuming. Now, as you have that growing normalization of distrust, of breaking through the preconceived notions of how, you know, these patriotic actors, you know, right, act, that broadens the group of targets for these folks that go against the desired ideological ends of these entities. And that's only further fueling and inflaming this inherent tension between these agencies and the population at large. Because even if we assume that a very large portion of the country still has views that are not hostile to the existence or even many of the stated goals of the modern CIA and the FBI, the area that is much, much, much larger. And this is why we've seen willingness to you know, get involved in, you know, spying on, you know, people going to school board meetings, why they're infiltrating churches, while they're going after a lot of these very small scale but widely dispersed aspects of civil society, because the enemies, right, the enemy class, the enemies of these agencies has probably never been broader than it is right now. And that creates a very, very dangerous dynamic. And of course, you know, again, going back to the, how horrible modern Congress is, the views of the legislature has probably never been more disaligned, particularly, again, I'm just for the sake of overseas. Well, it works on both sides, actually, right? If you talk to a leftist, right, there are very few members of the Democratic caucus that they are particularly happy with, right? You know, this is why they've been so dependent upon, you know, having, you know, Joe Biden with a red background, you know, pounding the fist on, you know, they're taking away your rights and democracy's under assault and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? On the one side, on the left, the rank and file that are not aligned with Democrats in Washington are being, I think, more or less successfully utilizing, you know, fear is being successfully utilized to make them fall in line against the threat of the other. While on the right, you know, there is just no representation for the majority of Republicans out there within DC. And so, like, those are the people that are most vulnerable. And this is precisely what we've seen the FBI and their growing embrace in nature on attacking, again, average folks out there. I mean, people that have very little political power in the grand scheme of things, because, you know, they are just average folks out there. And again, that's only fueling these tensions. And again, this is what is leading to these conversations that are taking place. And so it is on one side of the table, you know, as we have discussed, it is promising. There is a silver lining in the normalization of these views out there. On the other side, though, it's terrifying, because again, if we recognize and appreciate the power and influence and the willingness to, you know, there is no law, right? There is no statute. There is nothing. There's nothing formally established within our legal system that is capable of holding back a group, you know, an agency like the FBI or CIA to, you know, restrain them within the rule of law or anything like that. Then just the extent of that disconnect opens up the door for really horrific things, even more horrific things to happen going forward. And so on one side, awareness is a good thing. On the other side, the desperation that is created by that awareness can lead to worse times ahead. I mean, luckily we're such an uplifting, cheery show in our normal state of things. But, you know, this is I think one of these. You know, this is why, again, I think there is so much pessimism, so much you know, disillusionment, and that's the dangerous thing, is a demoralized society, or even worse, a society where anger is simply transmitted. You know, is exploited by grifters that are willing to tap into that anxiety, but not willing to, you know, really call a spade and say, you know, golly gosh darn, if only we elected the right people, you know, the FBI, you know, we can make the FBI American again, right? No, you know, we have to understand that it's the structural dynamics, it is the existence, the very existence of these agencies and the incentives and the structures and all that sort of stuff. That is the threat. And these are not things that can be reformed. These are things that must be destroyed. They must be broken up. They must be splintered, turned into 1,000 splinters and then thrown into the air, right? That is the only way of addressing this. And anyone who is willing to simply talk about, to fuel the anxiety, that is not willing to go that extra step, is grifting off of this tension, off of this anger. And that is a particular segment of the public intellectual base that should be particularly particularly disgusted or despised, because again they are trying to undermine the positive aspect that is there, which is again growing awareness of the problem, but trying to lead that anger, that public sentiment in a ultimately a useless vehicle at the end of the day. And again, that's why the fact that, again, the responses to Tucker and Joe Rogan interview, again, very, very hostile to Tucker. Again, this is not to say Tucker has all the answers. There's plenty of blind spots. You know, we've talked about them at a point in the past, but at least he's willing to you know, when he's right on target, he is usually willing to extend that full punch and not simply make some of these half-hearted gestures. And that is what we need more of, because again, the idea that this is something that there are political solutions to changing the predatory nature of these agencies is a fool's errand. And it's only those that are willing to identify these entities for what they are that have the solution. And that's why you've been pounding the table for quite some time about the need, not simply for reform, but the abolishment of the FBI and the CIA.
Yeah, abolition is the only answer here. Defund. Abolish, end,
confront. Yes. Right, particularly in the domestic sense, confront with utilizing state and county sheriffs and things like that. You know, there are tools. They're not perfect. Having a sheriff willing out there on the campaign trail campaigning is, I'm a constitutional sheriff and I'm going to stand up to the. It's easy to say that when you're trying to elect that position. It's quite another thing to do it. We don't want to oversimplify things, right? Like these are difficult things to do, but they are ultimately the necessary things to do, because nothing outside of confrontation and the political will to actually strike at the root is going to be useful for any of this stuff.
Yeah, we often get the question, well, what is to be done? Well, when you're in a position, when you're at this state where you've got organizations that still have a large amount of legitimacy and a lot of public support, then you're not at the point where you can just start passing laws or defunding them. We're just still at the point of stop saying nice things about these organizations. Stop being supportive. Stop saying nonsense like, well, I'm sure everyone who works there is a good person and they've just been led astray. No. You need to start treating these organizations like the garbage that they are and say so, and don't let elected officials get away with saying nice things about them. Don't pay attention to idiots like Sean Hannity, who wears a CIA button on his lapel. I mean, these are all repugnant, disgusting things, and you shouldn't let it act like it's no big deal. So insult the organizations, disparage them, we're still at that very primitive level where we just now have to teach people to disrespect these organizations, because that's just, we've got a lot of work to do. And that's just really, you ask what is to be done, you just start denying these organizations legitimacy. I mean, that's how the Soviet Union came down. People stopped giving legitimacy to the regime. They stopped acting like it had any right to be a regime or that the KGB was any sort of legitimate organization. That's, unfortunately, we're at that primitive level of opposition to the regime right now. And so what is to be done? That's one thing that you can do. And so don't believe all this nonsense when you talk to some staffer at you call your congressman's office and you say, what's up with XYZ? And the staffer says, well, these are all, very good people and maybe there's just some reform. Don't buy into that garbage. So with that, we better wrap up this episode of Radio Rothbard. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can find more on these topics at the Mises Institute's website, MISES humanaction.org. Remember to sign up for the Human Action Conference beginning May 16th. And just go to our site and click on events. So with that.
And Ryan, I wanted to let our listeners know that we've got a special membership deal, special for Mises podcast listeners. You can become a full member for just $25, usually $100. $25 for podcast listeners only. Go to Mises.org/listener to sign up there. And also, if you are a if you're a student out there, we have a few spots remaining. We're just about out, but we've got a few spots remaining at Mises University, which is our summer our week-long program in the summer. And you can learn from Ryan and I will be there, but you will also have some of our great faculty from around the world there as well. Best week of the year. If you are a student that wants to apply, check out Mises.org/events there. Again, we will be closing that very, very soon, but we do have a few spots remaining and would love to see some Radio Rothbard fans at Mises U. Always my favorite time of the year.
All right. And with that, I'll know we'll be back next week with more. And again, we're always taking suggestions on for future topics, so always feel free to email us at the Mises Institute. With that, I'll note we'll be back next week with more, so we'll see you next time.